Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tasting NYC, where you can sample all the great things New York has to offer. I'm your host, Andy Troy, and for the next 60 minutes, I'll not only clue you into some great things to do around town, but we'll also chat with some interesting local personalities. Tonight's guests are belly dancer Tana Valentine and singer Joe Kelly. Tana, who I know well, and Joey, who I go way back with, but actually don't know that well. But I'm going to find out all about him tonight. But first, we've got some plugs. For those of you who haven't read my book, Living Young, 32 Habits of Ageless People, or seen my DVD, The Bedroom Workout for Men, there's no time like the present. Both are available on Amazon.com and my website, AndyTroy.com, and give you a great opportunity to get some holiday shopping done early. Remember that if you bring my book to any of my events, I'll be happy to autograph it for you. Speaking of which, we have a great party coming up this Friday, November 20th at Duvet, on 21st between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 10 p.m. It's our alternative belly dance show, which features well-known local performers dancing to non-traditional music. The details for this and all my monthly events are on my website, tastingnyc.com. Also, for those of you who are into real estate, there's a great networking event coming up on Tuesday, November 24th from 6 to 8 p.m., hosted by my pals Evan St. Gerard and Dean Graber of Contour Mortgage. It will be held on the second floor of a bar called Social at 795 8th Avenue between 48th and 49th Streets. Admission is free, but if you'd like to attend, you need to RSVP to evans@yahoo.com. That's E-V-A-N-T-Z. At yahoo.com by 2:30 on the day of the event. You can also write him for further details. They're also collecting donations at the event for the Food Bank of New York, so if you can help out by bringing some canned goods, that's always good karma. My pal Johnny Mandolin, a.k.a. John Anello, a.k.a. John Sexton, has a new DVD out. CD, I'm sorry. Wrong medium.
It's all right.
La Voce Mia, but he would be good to see.
I have a perfect face for radio.
The old jokes. Where would we be without them?
Ba-dum-bum.
Order your copy today at johnnymandolin.com or call E. Rossi at 212-226-9254, and they will hook you up. Finally, sponsors, we want them. If you'd like to promote your goods or services to our audience, contact the station or me directly at andyftroy@aol.com. That's A-N-D-Y-F, like Frank, T-R-O-Y, at AOL. And I listen to the rebroadcast, so who knows? Maybe I'll buy you stuff. Okay, that's enough plugs for one night.
Yeah, so Andy, how you doing? What's going on?
I'm good. That's the voice of the legendary Johnny Mandolin.
Hey, on the air and live.
Who I got to hear perform last night, and we will speak about that momentarily. But first, I must chastise him for missing my big event this past Thursday at Slate. Where were you, John?
I was in here recording a show.
No excuses. It's official.
True.
Hey, don't talk about official Sintani business. Well, I had a good party at Slate. It's an interesting place. They have a full bar upstairs, and downstairs they have pool, ping pong, foosball, all that crap. In case you get tired of talking to me, you can go play some games. So we did have a good time, and we missed you, John.
Well, you know, I really wanted to come. We were backed up on production, and we're going to be broadcasting next week from Los Angeles. As you know, as most of our fans know, we have a New York studio and a Los Angeles studio.
It's a very big building.
It stretches 3,000 miles. Well, no, actually, it's two buildings, but we'll be broadcasting from there next week, and Andy will be on at his regular time. And also, after Andy's show, we have coming up the team of IYF Radio. These are these crazy guys on the air, and it's a political show on our political channel. So stand by for all that good fun. And Andy, I know you've got a lot of things going on. You've got a lot of big shows coming up. Tell the folks, because I've been to many of Andy's shows, tell them a couple of the good reasons for coming to one of your events.
Well, I'll be there, and I'm very, very lonely. I don't know a lot of people, and I really need to meet more people. So come down, hang out with me, and that's really the most important reason. Pity. No, we have a really nice crowd, anywhere from 200 to 600 people, depending on the event. And we do wine tastings, which I kind of call wine tasting light, because you don't have to really be a heavy wine tasting kind of person. You get to sample some wines, read some notes on them, get them at a discounted price, but they also have a full bar. And we usually have some type of entertainment as well. But we also had our big Halloween party, which John attended.
Oh, that was fun. That was the best.
We have a great luau in the summer. We got a Mardi Gras party coming up in February. We got a big we have a big holiday party coming up in December, which we will release information on at the crucial time, where you can actually get some of your Christmas shopping done.
And you know,
if you didn't just buy my book and that wasn't enough for your family, then you can get some other stuff there.
And some of the best things about Andy's party that I have to tell people out there, a lot of people in New York say, well, I'm lonely, I'm bored, I can't meet anybody, I don't know what to do. If you go to Andy's party, you'll meet lots of people. There's people there who are there to meet. That's why they call it a meetup. And also, it's always a good time, and most of the parties are free.
And if you don't meet anybody, there's always drinking.
And, hey, that's a good thing.
Okay, we will pause for a station break, and we will be right back.
You are listening to the Centani Broadcasting Network, CENTANNI Broadcasting.com, in high-definition digital stereo.
Who that girl was making that announcement? She sounded Russian. It could be one of my neighbors from Sheepshead Bay. Okay, well, we're back. And we've got someone with us who I have a long and glorious history of not really knowing each other very well. Joe Kelly, who I actually went to junior high school with. And Joe, I can barely see you over there.
How you doing, Andy?
I need new contact lenses. Oh,
no,
good.
You don't. No,
well,
you don't. How are you?
Joe, I have to tell you that you take some of the blame for me not doing better in school.
What do you mean?
I sat behind you, and you're really tall, and I actually couldn't see the board.
Oh, well, thanks, Andy. It only took X amount of years to tell me this.
If only we had gotten out of junior high school, you know, and made the normal 4 years instead of eight.
Well, back when we went to junior high school, didn't they seat us by height? So were you taller than me?
No, I was shorter than you.
Oh, I don't know how that worked out then.
It was very unfortunate.
Let me apologize for that.
Okay. And then after they probably moved you out of my way so I could finally pass a class, I believe I sat next to your girlfriend, Denise.
You sat next to my girlfriend, Denise, and you probably didn't see me in the class because the dean, Mr. Hiltzik, had me down in his room for detention many, many times.
You were one of the tough guys in the school.
Tough? I don't know if it was tough. It was just misguided. Rebel without a clue, I like to call it, Andy.
Well, actually, I remember sitting next to Denise once and glancing over at her paper, and she was writing something to you, and I remember reading, I got this creep sitting next to me. That's all I remember.
I wonder what the note said. I would have loved to have...
And there was no... I wish there had been somebody sitting on the other side, but she was by the window.
Yeah. She was gorgeous, wasn't she?
She
left me for another guy, you know.
Ah, blonde.
And like I told you, it was stupid enough, I put a tattoo of her name on my arm, Andy. And I thought that was the height of Brooklyn respect back then.
So
until she dumped me, and then I had to fill it in with flowers and stuff.
That's the thing. You were a kind of guy who was getting tattoos before tattoos were cool.
Well, yeah. We used to go down Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn, and it was this one guy you can go and get tattoos from, and it was in a dirty, seedy basement. And what was his name? I think it was Frankie was his name.
Everybody's in Brooklyn.
Yeah,
Frankie,
Johnny, Bill, yeah. So, those were the days, I guess, when tattoos were illegal, right? Now you have tattoo parlors all over the place. It's crazy.
So where were you living around then? I mean, do you remember some of those things?
I was born and raised in Marine Park, Brooklyn. That's where I grew up. And as I got older, there weren't too many musicians there in Marine Park. And, I started venturing out. But prior to venturing out, we had our friends that we grew up with, Andy. We have some mutual friends. I don't know if you know that.
Well, I do, actually, and this was another interesting part of our kind of distant relationship that we had. I started writing with a guy named David Stoller back in the, I guess, late 70s, and eventually the songs I wrote with him were the songs that we used for my band The Shades, but I started hanging out with him and John D., who was the guitarist. And they started talking about the band before it was White Gold was the band they were in when I knew them, and it was called East before.
I was in that band.
And they mentioned the name of the singer, and
that band. We were neighborhood kids. John D. lived down the block from me, and Tommy Coyne, who was his cousin, lived.
He's now in Texas, I believe.
Yeah, and I just recently reunited with him via MySpace. That's been a trip. And John Minotti lived on 36th Street, which was like four or five blocks from me when we were kids. And we got together and we started our first original band. Back then we were influenced by crazy music. What was it like? Genesis and King Crimson and
I still remember those songs when they were playing them for me, and they were like, they wanted to get a little more pop, so that's why they brought me in to like start writing songs that weren't like 14 minutes long.
Right. That's about when I exited, because I think I wanted to hit the city. Actually what happened was I started another original band in Brooklyn, and then the bass player of that band wound up becoming the contractor for what was to be the Mud Club.
I was just by there a couple of weeks ago, and there's like a plaque on the wall.
Isn't that something? That really is something.
It wasn't around long, though, was it?
Well, I started working there in 1978. I worked there till 1981. Then I went over to Max's Kansas City for a brief stint, and then on to some after-hours clubs that were in New York City, rock and roll after-hours clubs.
Well, I've bored my audience a couple of times with stories about my first gig, which was, actually, you're in the neighborhood, you might know the place. I played at an Italian-Irish wedding at a Jewish war veterans hall.
I love it. Only in Brooklyn, right?
And the groom got drunk and beat up the bride's family.
Oh.
And then they hired us for overtime because this was a good time for them, apparently.
Yeah, obviously.
But that was at the place on Avenue J and East 42nd Street or something. It was like a Jewish war veterans hall. I don't know if you ever were over there.
I think I recall the area. I wasn't born and raised too far from there.
But what was your first gig like?
My first gig was with East, I think, and it was at Brandeis University. We had rehearsed our brains out with Dave, your buddy, and it was great. It was great. It was like it was pretty full.
Was this original music?
It was all original music. Yeah, we were doing Gentle Giant type stuff and all this progressive music.
So basically, when I knew him, they had cut down from the 18-minute Gentle Giant songs to the 14-minute Genesis songs.
Well, you can blame Dave for that. And if you're listening, Dave, it is your fault, you know.
And I knocked him down to 4 minutes.
Good, good. Now we just knocked him down to 2. I want you to know. So we're making progress, Andy.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story about Peter Lambden, the singer after you. He was very good, and then he eventually moved upstate. And he got into like an Allman Brothers. He couldn't really do he was doing oldies for a while, and he couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah.
So he got into an Allman Brothers cover band.
Uh-huh.
And he said it's great, because he sings one verse, and he goes and sits down for 10 minutes while they jam.
I love it.
And he comes back and sings another verse, and the song is over.
It's true.
So that's the way to go when you get older, I guess. A drummer can't really pull that off.
Well, we're not doing that now, I'll tell you that. The older we get here, we just seem to be getting more and more busy. I mean, between working with Buddy Love and I'm working on a couple of recording projects with Johnny Rayo and Tommy Price from Billy Idol. Joan Jace, I am a name drop. But you know what the best part is? They're my friends, and we grew up together. So regardless of what the outcome was.
I went to high school with Willie Randolph.
Did you?
Yeah,
Where did he go to school?
We didn't know each other the same as I didn't know you, but I went to school with you too and didn't know you.
Yeah.
That's the way most of my relationships seem to go.
He was probably looking at my girlfriend, I bet you, at that time.
Just her paper.
Oh.
Well, but
you still don't know what was on that paper, do we?
No. Well, I went to Huddy. I went to Tilden High School.
Ah, there it is. I went to James Madison, so that's where we parted ways, Andy.
Yes. Well, let's see.
What do you want to see?
You're kind of a guy who you seem like, a real fun guy. Have you got like a wild story from a gig for me?
Oh, there's so many of them, to be honest with you. Wild story, huh?
Grab one. Pick one.
Jeez, I don't know. Let me see. Wild story. I don't know about playing, but I can tell you a wild story when we were working at the Mud Club.
Okay,
we were starting to book bands, and at the time they weren't very popular, shall we say. I think the B-52s, the first time they played there, it was at the Mud Club, and followed by the Talking Heads, and a lot of art and poetry going on back then, hanging out with people like Keith Haring and John Miguel Basquiat. And so it was a very very cool Brian Eno-esque, Robert Fripp-esque type atmosphere.
I remember the ads from the Mud Club. I could never even read them. I can't speak now. So that makes perfect sense. But there would be like a Chinese rockabilly band or, Swedish reggae band or something.
Yeah, Steve was insane. In any event, to follow suit like that, we started maybe about 4 or 5 years in from the club. Things started, it became very popular, and the cool people weren't hanging out there anymore. So we realized we couldn't attract the artsy type of bands anymore, so we had to change direction. And I remember one night, the club was packed. They booked Judas Priest, okay,
at the Mud Club
prior to them playing the Palladium. And I don't know how many people were in there at the time, but you had to see just like this in unison, about face. Everyone walked out the door, and I guess that was the beginning of the end for the Mud Club.
But the beginning of success for Judas Priest?
Yeah, well, as I said, they worked out their new songs and show there, and then they went over to the Palladium and did it the next day. But it just changed the whole aura and environment, and that's when I left and went over to Max's.
Well, following our chronology, after we kind of sort of knew each other in junior high school and didn't know each other while you were playing with Dave, I did finally connect with you at Zappa's, a legendary club in Brooklyn. I think it's like a nursery school or something now.
That was a fantastic club when you really think about it. I mean, some great bands were nurtured out of there, and even our own band, Buddy Love.
That's where I first saw the legendary Buddy Love.
Do you know Doug Kazam?
Doug Kazam, it sounds familiar.
Let me tell you about Doug Kazam.
Who, me?
Hi, Doug.
Hey, Joe.
This is Doug
Kazam. Where'd he come from?
He's been around for longer than you may think.
It's the magic of radio.
Doug Kazam.
I haven't been around, but I've been nearby.
Yeah, he was the guitar player you saw at Zappa's when we played there. He is the creator of Buddy Love. For the most part, writes the songs.
It's basically all about me.
Yeah. And I think that's why we get along so well, because I love that.
I actually have a bone to pick with him.
With Doug? Me?
Do you know that you asked to be removed from my mailing list?
I'm
in therapy.
Oh, my God. I'm so chagrined.
As well you should be.
What happened, Doug?
I don't know. What do you have against me?
I didn't understand what they were.
Have I come between you and Joey in some way?
Not at all.
Well, right now you're in between me and him, actually.
Don't take it personal.
Don't get too technical.
He didn't know who you were, the great disc jockey. Do we call you a disc jockey?
No, actually. I'm
He's
really
a broadcaster.
I'm primitive man. I'm not good with any technology. That's why we have John here.
Is that Johnny Mandolin?
That is the legend.
Johnny, you rock, let me say.
No,
I love hanging with you.
I tremolo.
Can you really say you rock on the mandolin?
You are just too cool. I love Johnny Mandolin. Luigi, you're going to love this guy.
Well, moving on back to Buddy Love.
Yes.
Who now, in the final stages of our relationship, you're now playing in Buddy Love still, but now with my old writing partner Dave Stoller, who you started with in East.
To make things
even more interesting, it's all the same band members from 1980 in Buddy Love plus David.
It's like Buddy Love plus, yeah. That's
is that odd?
A bunch of like 70-year-old rockers. It's great.
Reminds
me of when I saw Cream a couple of years ago at the Garden.
You know, they were great, weren't they?
They were. I went with John D. And one of, I think, Tommy Coyne's cousins or something, which would be John's cousin too, actually. And nobody in the crowd could walk without assistance, and they weren't stoned. You know, when we were kids, people couldn't walk, but at least there was a reason.
Yeah, so you saw Buddy Love at Zappa's, 25 years ago, 30 years ago? That's when we got together. I think we did our first single.
When I was 9.
With Michael Brecker, and we love that. That's what started it for us, really. I mean, after we made that record, Vince Skelser over at WNEW would play that song every night in the 9:30 slot, and he would sandwich it in between On the Beach by Southside Johnny and I Want to Be a Lifeguard by Blotto.
I remember that.
And because of that, I guess that's why we're here.
Really, we're still here anyway.
Yeah, it's still here, right.
Okay, we're going to pause from all this hilarity for station identification and some messages, and we'll be back.
You are listening to the Centani Broadcasting Network, CENTANNI Broadcasting.com. In high-definition digital stereo.
We're back with the members of Buddy Love.
Hey.
Hey.
And he actually knows at least one out of every three names he mentions as his personal friends. No. Joey is as a guy who knows people.
You know why it's funny?
Why?
Because it's true.
Oh,
well, that's the best humor.
That's my buddy. That's my buddy. No, hey, look, you know, if you worked at the Mud Club in Maxis, Kansas City, and you'd know a lot of people too. So don't hold it against me.
I don't. I just don't know anybody.
And like I like to say, Andy, which comes from the bottom of my heart.
Really?
I've met them all, and I'm not impressed.
Okay. But as long as I'm still impressing you.
I like you.
I got a guy over here who could turn this show off. So be nice to me. Anyway.
Yes, okay. Sir.
I would like to talk a little bit about the Buddy Love music. How would you categorize your music?
Uh-oh, I'll leave that to Doug. That's a tricky one.
Well, talk to us, Doug.
People call it power pop, but okay. I just call it melodic rock and roll. It's guitar-driven, you know, Beatle-y, Bad Finger-y.
They had a pretty bad career.
Yes, it was very sad, but their music was amazing. So yeah. That's what I'm talking
about. You
know,
Bad Finger was the only band when they did Behind the Music where they actually had to tone it down.
Yeah, I know. It's really tragic. Their story is tragic. Yeah, but that's another story.
Okay, we'll cover that next time. But right now, we're going to play some Buddy Love, I think. Which track do you guys want to hear?
Well, you know, your buddy Dave Stoll is on Great Pretender.
Great Pretender. So
well,
that sounds like...
Well, I'm not suggesting that.
You said you brought it up. Great Pretender it is.
Okay. I think Doug had another one in mind.
I don't care.
Okay. See, Doug doesn't
I'm
care.
Easy.
That's why we get along. And Andy, did you happen to mention that Buddy Love is recently reunited with all the original members?
I didn't know that myself.
Yes, we are.
It's going
you
on.
You
got to
give me more information. Where is my staff? Where are my notes?
Yeah, well, I'm your notes, Andy.
Okay.
I'm your notes.
We are ready to hear a tune from Buddy Love, so hang in there, everybody.
Okay.
Okay, well, you just listened to, I believe it was The Great Pretender, right?
Featuring David Stoller.
Okay, I'm going to ask my buddy Doug here, what's that song about?
Oh, it's about...
It's about 3 minutes long.
Ba-dum-bum. No, it's about lying at the beginning of a relationship and then having to explain yourself after the fact.
So it's reality-based.
Basically, yes.
Okay, that's good. I like knowing what things are about. So that's great. And actually, as long as I have you guys here, I brought Joey a present. Well, two presents.
What's that?
Well,
I love presents.
Since you really have never gotten to hear my music, I brought a couple of CDs that I made of songs that I wrote over the years.
Is that right?
These aren't all like, you know, really high-end studio stuff. I just threw them all because I have
like those high-end things.
Yeah. Well, I had a record out, and the record was, nobody can play it anymore because nobody's got a turntable. So I threw together songs that I wrote over the years for different bands. There'll be a lot of Dave and John on here.
Is that right?
And I wrote all these songs, many of them with Dave. And I wanted you to have them as a souvenir of our great meeting that will be passed to you by the legendary Johnny Mandolin.
Thank you very, very much. I don't know what to say. This is great.
I got him speechless. It took 30 years.
Wow. This is great.
So that's how you do it.
Actually, I don't know if you're familiar with Richard Termini.
Yes. Why does that name sound familiar?
Maybe you know him.
I think I do.
He's a keyboard player, a very good one, and he was in a band called Dune, I think.
Yes.
And he ended up producing our single, the Shade single, When You're Gone, which you will hear a snippet of at the end of this show.
Andy, may I say these are packaged excellently.
You can say it.
These are well packaged. I'm going to pass these to Doug so he can take a look. They are really good. What do you think of that?
So it's a compilation of stuff that I wrote. And actually, speaking of Richie, I have a Richie Termini story that just came up like yesterday.
What's that?
It works John D in. It brings the whole crew together. John actually forwarded me an email. Richie's in Europe somewhere.
Is that right? And what's he doing there?
Who knows? He sent John an email. He wrote to him, not me. He doesn't care about me. Anyway, Richie sent him something from a flyer of the Shades from like 1979. And John couldn't figure out how he knew what year it was until I looked at it and realized it's a page from The Voice.
Is that right?
So there was like an ad from CBGB's, probably like the first time we ever played there. I don't know how Richie got a hold of it, but
what year was that? Do you recall?
I actually don't know. The only reason I know is Richie claimed in his email to John it was 79. I didn't think we started playing until maybe 80 in clubs, but I guess it could be.
Well, I guess it could be, but based on the music and the material that I had heard from David, I would have thought it would have been something in the early 80s, but I could be wrong because, you know, us musicians here in the New York City scene, we're ahead of the curve.
We were, we were writing stuff for people who weren't playing at a long time
ago. That's right. That's right.
Right. In fact, that's kind of how the Shades got together. We wrote a bunch of songs for a number of bands, and eventually we said, we've got all these songs. I wanted to put it, and they all had a similar sound, so I figured, let me give myself something to do to get off the streets, and I put a band together.
That's great. That's great. And Dave played me some stuff, and I sincerely and honestly mean it. I like it. I like it.
So what's next for you guys? You have any gigs coming up?
Actually, we've been spending a lot of time in the studio working on our next CD.
Well, that's what's coming up.
Yes. Yes.
You got a name of any tracks, a name of the CD as a whole, anything you can give us?
We're toying with the idea of titling it after one of the big songs on the that we're working on called Crying Town, but that's still in progress. We're still not sure if that's what the CD is going to be called.
And may I mention, Doug is humble, so I'm going to mention this, that we have, helping us with the production phases of Crying Town, the co-writer of the song, along with Doug, Tommy Burns. Tommy plays guitar. Here I go name-dropping again. Tommy plays guitar and is the musical director for Billy Joel, and we are very honored and humbled to have him produce our first single off the record, and it's coming out. Andy, I got to play it to you offline. You're going to love it.
Okay.
In fact, he just produced Alexa Ray Joel's new record that you've probably been seeing on Tyra or whatever TV show she's been appearing on.
Alexa Ray's been appearing on it?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Well, I want to let you guys know that all your gigs in the New York City area can be posted for free on my website, tastingnyc.com.
Oh, that would be great. Thanks.
We have a page. We have a page called the Post and View Your Events page, where people post all their New York City events for free. It's kind of like a board of events. In case you're bored of my events, I guess. But there's a page for my events, and there's a page for everyone else's events.
I'm going to do that first thing.
Because, I like to share the space. So you're going to get a special code so that you can post your events, Joe.
Wow.
And it's absolutely useless because anyone can post.
Well, can you please give it to Doug, because I don't do much posting. That's my postmaster.
Yeah, I'm the computer nerd.
Postmaster general. Right.
Doug is a computer guy.
Right.
For any,
I take care of the fan pages on Facebook
nerd,
and MySpace.
I'm proud of it.
He's a nerd. He's a nerd, and his mother won't admit it. If any of you grandmas need your hard drive set up or something, you give this guy a call.
The cable modems I specialize in.
Could you have helped my father set his digital watch?
Yes.
Absolutely.
You know, I got to tell you, my father, he was something. My father could do plumbing, electrical work, any of that kind of stuff I can't do. But I remember him having this old stereo. And then he had an even older stereo, like one of these big cabinet things that like, had a Victrola in the middle and a TV.
Right.
And he hooked together the speakers from the old, like, 1940s stereo with the cheesy speakers from the cheap stereo. And he thought he had quadraphonic sound. And the best part is he moved the balance all the way to the bottom, completely shutting off one side of the system. And he thought he was listening to quadraphonic sound. It was great. Okay. On that note,
that's awesome.
We're going to go out and we're going to have a station break with another song from Buddy Love.
wanna be part of my world. Never mind, I'll try to please me. Don't put your heart on the shelf.
Was Buddy Love doing a song I don't know the name of? What was that?
Where do we go from here?
Where do we go from here?
I don't know. Whenever we're done, we might get a drink. But what's the name of that song?
Where do we go from here?
I want to know.
I knew he was going to try some kind of live performance. I knew we couldn't control him. Well, it's been great seeing you guys.
Thank you very much, Andy. It's great seeing you after all these years. I hope you don't become a stranger.
Well, the first time we saw each other was about 30 years ago, then about 20 years ago. So let's try to make it only about 15 years this time.
How about we get together and we have a couple of drinks, or we get together and go to a show and have some fun. What do you say?
Why don't we get together and drink at a show?
There you go.
Okay, we are now going to pause for a commercial break, and we will be back with the lovely and talented Tana Valentine.
You are listening to the Centani Broadcasting Network, CENTANNI Broadcasting.com, in high definition digital stereo.
Okay, we're back, and we've now moved in a different direction from the hilarity of the comedy duo of Buddy Love, and we're now here with Tana Valentine. How are you doing there, Tana?
I'm doing very well, Andy. How are you?
A different tone as you hear. We have a very elegant lady here, very lovely. And she's going to tell us all kinds of interesting things, but the first thing she's going to tell us is, where are you from?
Well, I've lived in New York for many years. But
I recognize your Brooklyn accent.
Right, exactly. Actually, my accent has kind of disappeared. I was born in the Rocky Mountains, Missoula, Montana.
Wow, that's a long way from Montana. How do you find New York? How is it different from where you're from?
It's like another planet. It's just like another planet. It took me about a year of living here to even begin to get used to it.
And how do you feel about it now? Are you comfortable here?
Oh, I love it. I love Montana, but I love New York, too. New York is just amazing.
She's very flexible. So, as we know, you are very involved in the belly dance scene, both locally and not just locally. So I believe we have, you at one time won a competition, as I recall, in Virginia Beach.
Yeah, actually that was my first competition. I've only been in two of them, so I was very fortunate. Drove down to Virginia Beach. It was called the East Coast Classic, and took second place in the Grand Champion category. But it represented a lot of work. So it was a lovely, wonderful experience, but it was a tremendous amount of work.
Okay, we're jumping ahead there. I want to go back to the beginning. At what age did you realize that belly dance appealed to you?
Boy, I was so young. It's hard to pick the exact number, but I would say like 9 or 10. It was ridiculously young.
Wow, and what was it that attracted a 9-year-old girl to belly dance?
I know, isn't that strange? As an adult, you kind of look back and you analyze it a little bit. And it really was the aesthetic. It was the visual appeal of, like, the album covers. My mother had taken belly dance and had come home with the old LPs. And when you're looking at the exotic costuming, that's really what grabbed me. And the costuming is my favorite part.
So you like costumes?
Yes. I love costumes, all costumes. Halloween, Mardi Gras, any type of costume I'm there.
Do you have many?
Yes, I have too many costumes.
So belly dancers are not like me, where, you know, you just kind of throw on the same pair of pants every day and, like, make the rounds? Like when I was in a band, you know, I wore kind of the same outfit a lot. Do you guys feel the need to switch up a lot, huh?
Yeah, you don't really want to be seen in the same thing all the time. I mean, it depends on the situation. When you're dancing at, let's say, private parties, you know, the private party has seen you maybe once. This might be the only time they see you. But if you're doing regular restaurant or club work, you can't have the same costume all the time. And when you're photographed a lot or you're doing video, DVD filming, that really has been a little bit of a problem for me, which I love doing it, but you get to where your costumes have all been seen and featured, and you really kind of have to move on. Even when you love the costume, everyone has seen it, so.
It was so much easier being in the Temptations. And like when I was playing in bands, we had two kind of shirts, white and used to be white. But apparently it's different for you guys. Okay, well, we've got a show coming up together, sort of. I won't be dancing, as far as I know.
You can if you want to.
Okay, well, it's on the 20th at a club called Duvet. It's the first time that we're doing that there. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what makes alternative belly dance different from regular belly dance?
Well, that's kind of to really answer it fully would take like forever. But I called the show the Alternative Belly Dance Show. And just for a quick bit of belly dance history, I mean, belly dance in its like purest form, if you want to call it the most traditional form, it's a folkloric dance. It comes from very specific regions, specific cultures. And what happened is over time, a cabaret style of this dance evolved, both in Egypt and also here after the Egyptian one evolved here in America. So you have these two kind of different strains, very much related, but different, American cabaret-style belly dance and Arabic cabaret-style belly dance. And then as time went on, much more recently, I'd say within the last 10 years, a branch developed called American tribal style, which, even though it's very recent, was really reaching back to some of the more folkloric roots of the dance. But now we've kind of arrived at a place, and especially here in New York, where there's this kind of anything-goes mentality in belly dance, so it's become very loose, some of the performances that are going on and that are called belly dance. In my particular show, even though alternative is not really a very, it's not kind of romantic or sexy, but it refers primarily to the music. Because my shows are happening in a Western nightclub and not in a typical belly dance venue, we're encouraging the dancers to use alternative music, you know, Western music, pop music, but they're still dancing with primarily a belly dance vocabulary. And the costuming is fairly traditional, although, you know, I encourage them to branch out with that, too.
Well, at the last show, we had someone dance to Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses.
Oh,
we had somebody dance in a hula hoop to Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, it was Anastasia.
And some crazy girl, I really don't even remember, she didn't make much of an impression on me. She danced to Enter Sandman, Mariano Rivera's song, or Guns N' or Metallica, depending on your perspective, how much you like baseball. And that was actually you.
That was me, yes. I love Metallica. And I love that song, Enter Sandman. And the audience loved it. It's just so... The thing is, when you use the Western music, again, and we're dealing with an audience that is not your typical belly dance audience. They didn't come there seeking belly dance the way people might go to a club or a restaurant that they know has live musicians and live dancers, or even where they have, you know, the canned music, but you have a dancer with your dinner. They're there to hang out. They're there to network and socialize and have a few drinks. So when they hear a song they know and they're watching the dancer interpret it, they really plug into it a lot more. And they enjoy the performance that much more because, you know, let's face it, how many people in an average Western nightclub here in New York speak Arabic? So if you're using the traditional music, there's like a distancing.
Well, also from, we've done a number of these now. What is it, maybe nine, I think, something like
that? Yeah, well, the one coming up on Friday, I can't believe it. It's the fourth anniversary. We do them twice a year, so this will be Alternative Belly Dance 9, or ABD9, as one of my dancers has coined it.
Okay, and as I recall, there have been a number of interesting props used by some of the dancers. Why don't you tell us about some of those?
Well, this is one thing, again, with this kind of more modern, creative, exploratory forms of belly dance, there have been some unusual props surfacing that are some of them becoming quite popular. Fan veils is one, and I will confess that even though I'm very much a traditionalist at heart, I love fan veils. I fell in love with them. I was possibly one of the first people here in New York to get them and use them in shows, and they're great. They're great for alternative types of music. The hula hooping. The hooping has become it has a small but very passionate following in belly dance, and it really is just so different, and the audiences just love it. We had another wonderful dancer, Teyuta. She uses all kinds of props exceptionally well, but she has the poi balls, the poi spinning, and they
those
like
were
light
great.
Up. Yeah, they were. They were really great. The audience just was absolutely mesmerized by them.
There's almost had like a martial arts feel to it.
Yeah.
She's swinging
yeah.
these balls. For those of you who haven't seen it, these balls are kind of like on strings, I guess. I don't know what that's made out of.
I don't either, to tell you.
And she just swings them in all different directions, and they catch the light, and it's really a fascinating thing to watch.
Yeah, it is, it is. And she's great. And it was these, again, you're kind of pushing the envelope. And as somewhat of a traditionalist, sometimes I'm like, well, is this really belly dance? But for the most part in my shows, I feel that it is, because I'm dealing with dancers that I know, and I encourage them. It's an opportunity to kind of pull out your fun props and enjoy them.
So how do you choose the dancers? What makes you decide who gets to be in AB10.
Right, as they line up and wait and hope that I'm going to call them. I've been really fortunate because I've been a part of the New York belly dance community for so long. I know so many wonderful, wonderful people. And generally speaking, I do prefer to work with dancers that I know, just because I know what it's like to work with them. I will sometimes work with a dancer that I don't know personally so well, but I really want to have seen them perform. And I'm looking for, I want good dancers. I mean, I don't want it, you know, that you have a cool prop, but you don't really know how to dance. So experienced, professional caliber dancers. And I do consider my audience as well, because we have a very mixed audience. So I like to have diversity in my dancers. I don't want them all to be the same look or the same, you know, background or ethnicity.
I just want them to show up.
Yeah, well, I want them to show up and early, preferably.
Early is good, girls,
yeah.
If you're out there. I'm an older person. I can't take a lot of stress. I want you there early on Friday.
No, and they've all been warned, and everyone knows that I'm like very mellow most of the time, but when the show, until the show finishes on the nights we have the show, I'm like very stressed because I need all my girls in the house, then I need them all in costume, I need all the music to the DJ. It's a lot of work pulling these shows off.
Well, as you point out, it can be a complicated thing. What are some of the staging considerations in putting something like this together?
It can really be a problem. Well, when we started this, it was back at Light, which was a fun nightclub that has unfortunately since gone out of business. And there was no real stage, but they had like a landing, like a very large landing that was the step down into the main room. And it just worked for us to have the dancers there. But now then the problem was, while the dancer was dancing, you couldn't enter the main room, nor could you get to the bathroom.
No going to the bathroom during the show.
That was a little bit tricky there.
In or out of the bathroom?
Well, either. If you were in, you're kind of trapped.
I'm saying no going to the bathroom, in or out of the bathroom.
Right.
Behave yourselves.
And then at like at Taj, and we've done, I think we've done most of the shows at Taj, which I love. That's really one of my favorite nightclubs in the city. They have a portable stage. Well, when we first started there, we didn't realize how large it was. They brought out half of it. So my dancers for that show were dancing on this raised platform that was only about 4 feet deep. And they were like clinging to the edge of it. It was ridiculous. But we didn't know they had another whole piece they could have put out, because when it's full, it's about an 8x8 dance surface.
So the dancer, after that first show, was able to use both feet.
Exactly.
Well, I found that made the show a little more interesting. I also remember a very tall dancer who had an issue.
Yeah, we had a Jacqueline, a lovely dancer who's like, oh my gosh, like 6'3", 6'4".
Something like that.
And she was going to be using wings, which are a prop that extend well beyond your arm length. And at that time at Taj, they had these hanging decorations, like balloons, that were over where the stage area was. And we couldn't put her up there. There was no way for her to dance without knocking them all around. We actually had to have her dance down on the floor and just leave the stage bare that night.
Well, there's some other concerns. I know that we have them put up the stage fairly early, and the show doesn't happen at the beginning of the night, of course.
Yeah, that's another problem, is keeping people. I mean, you want everyone to have fun, and that's a big part of having a successful show. You have to know your audience. You have to respect your audience. But they all want to sit on the stage. They want to put their bags on the stage.
There is a coat check.
Yeah, well, no one wants to put it in the coat check, I guess. And then you have to be getting them all off the stage, which, thank God, you've been very helpful in, you know.
I'm bag police.
Yeah, you're the police. You're the authoritative figure that comes out and says, okay, we have to clear the stage now. We do have a problem sometimes, too, when people spill drinks on it, because then you've got to get someone to mop that up.
I actually remember grabbing a big wad of bar napkins on Halloween to kind of clean up the stage before I started dragging all kinds of people up in wacky costumes. So, guys, try to not spill stuff on the stage, buddy, all right? That'll be helpful.
We're very lucky because at Duvet, which will be, I'm sure, a whole new host of challenges since I haven't done the show there, and I'm just waiting to see what's going to happen. But Duvet has a wonderful permanent wooden stage, and that is going to be really nice. And that's why for this particular show I'm having a lot of group numbers, which I've never been able to do before, because you just couldn't fit them on the stage at Taj.
Yeah, you have to take advantage of the opportunities. Kind of like, you know, a baseball team. If you got short left field, you know, you got some hitters who can hit the left field.
Exactly.
I know you're a big baseball fan. Okay, so that's interesting. And I know that helping people on and off the stage is a consideration.
Yeah, that's been another.
At Taj, we won't have that at Duvet, I guess.
No, that's another thing at Taj. Is there's no, it's a raised platform. But there's no step up or down, so we usually have to go scrambling to get some of the ottomans from the upstairs lounge brought down to the stage area, and then I have to recruit two nice gentlemen from the audience to help my ladies up and down so no one, you know, breaks a leg.
And one guy did that and was very nice, and his girlfriend got jealous, so that's one of the complications you can get in this business.
Yeah, it's always a problem.
Yeah. Well, can you give us any highlights of the past shows? Let's get the audience excited about Friday night.
Well, there have been a lot. I think we've had a lot of great shows. I've had some, you know, world-class dancers. The fabulous Jahan Kamal has come and danced for me, and she's just mesmerizing. Teyuta with the light-up poi balls was wonderful. Rehana, another fabulous New York dancer, pulled you on stage, which is the first time that's ever happened. And
the first time I have belly danced in public since my early days of my career.
And she was doing Santana, I think, which the audience loved that.
Yeah, Smooth, I think.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
That was good. And I did not. I don't think I got to wear the Sultan's hat, though, did I?
No, we've been saving that. We haven't actually used the Sultan's hat yet. That might come out this Friday, though.
That's true. There is actually one of my friends is having a birthday celebration there. So possibly unbeknownst to him, he may end up wearing the Sultan's hat. For those of you who went to the Halloween party, think stove. That's a clue as to who may be wearing a hat this week. Okay, so let's see. I know that we worked on several DVDs together over the past 4 years or so. So why don't you give us a little info about them?
Yep, we did. I think we started with the Ultimate Belly Dance Fitness DVD, which was one of Jahan's. She did all the choreographies. And then working with World Dance New York and my friend Neon, we did two more Belly Dance Fitness DVDs. One was called Floor Work. And the other one, I think we called it originally Upper Body, but the title has been changed.
Oh, really? What's that called now?
I think it's called Total Body. And that involved like a cane, a belly dance cane, and a veil, and just arm movements to give your upper body a workout. And then I think I was in the Gothic belly dance video, but that was a performance one. So there's like
I
two
didn't
performances
get to be in
there.
That one.
No, you weren't in that one. And I'm trying
and
to
I look so cute in my little Billy Idol costume, too.
Well, maybe next time, if there's another one.
And then we, it wasn't belly dance. We also worked on an abs video together, but we won't get into that too much. But we will take a station break and be right back.
You are listening to the Centani Broadcasting Network, CENTANNI Broadcasting.com, in high definition digital stereo.
Okay, we're back with Tana Valentine, and something that we haven't touched on yet. I know there's a lot of things we could talk about, but you're involved with a collective called Venus Uprising. Why don't you give us a little info about that?
Venus Uprising, it is, as you say, a collective. It's a group of dancers. I mean, we all have kind of independent solo careers, But we kind of figured out that you can get so much more done if you come together and you share the responsibilities and you kind of brainstorm creatively and pool your resources. And primarily what we've done over the past few years has been coming up with a couple of concerts a year. We call them fantasy belly dance. Again, another terminology that, you know, what does it really mean? And I'm not always entirely certain. The fantasy element seems to be largely in the costuming. And also, I guess, the use of alternative music. We've done, I think we just finished, it was either our third or our fourth concert was in November. And then we have been producing a workshop series, which I'm actually working on that right now, trying to get the girls lined up and figure out what the topics are going to be. And the workshops will probably start in February of 2010 and run through June.
So when is the next concert going to be?
Well, we had been hoping for next April, but unfortunately we're having a really hard time finding theater space. And as anyone who has worked in New York and trying to find good performance venues, it is tough. It's tough and it's expensive. So hoping for April, fingers crossed, but it might end up not being quite that soon. It might be more like next fall.
Do you have another product in the pipeline, something to give people something to look forward to?
Oh, boy. I am so behind on the product that I am supposed to be working on. It's going to be another fitness, belly dance fitness product. The last product I did was called Belly Dance Show Basics, and that was more of a teaching product, primarily geared towards a lot of the women that would show up in my classes who were just lovely women who were having a really good time. But they wanted to dance for an immediate and specific occasion. They weren't really there to take classes for like 5 years and learn how to be a belly dancer. So my last product was really geared to them, giving them all the information and tools to go ahead and do a fun little belly dance routine for, you know, their husband's birthday, for Valentine's Day, something like that. This next product now, which came up a little more recently, World Dance New York has done a new series of belly dance fitness. I think one was called Luscious and Love Potion, and I think Hard Candy is the new one that's coming out soon. So I had discussed this with Neon. She had actually talked to me about it. And the one that I'm working on is going to be based again on this American cabaret show breakdown, but doing it as a fitness workout. So it's just...
Is there a title for this yet?
No, I haven't gotten
work
that far.
Work in progress.
It's a work in progress.
Can the name Andy Troy be worked into the title anywhere?
We'll try and work your name into it. Maybe I can work you in. Maybe you can do it. You'll be my test pilot because somebody's got to do the choreography. And it's about 40 minutes of choreography,
and it's hard. If you put my name in the title, I'm willing to wear the hat.
All right, that might be a deal. We'll see how that works out.
Well, why don't you give the people your contact info because I'm sure they'd be interested to check out these products and to know more about you.
My website, which I will admit, again, embarrassingly, I am about 4 years out of date on that. It's www.tannavalentine.com, and you can go and see pictures and read my bio. The best way to contact me, honestly, is Facebook, Tana Valentine on Facebook. You know, send me a message there, and I will respond to that. It's so much easier to keep Facebook updated than a website. And I'm due for a total website renovation.
And if you can't find her on Facebook, find me. And I will direct you to her because we are Facebook friends.
Yeah, that's right, we are.
We are friends.
And real life friends.
We are friends in the flesh and
on Facebook.
Okay, folks, it was great having you here tonight, Tana.
Thank you. It was lovely being here.
And I'll look forward to seeing you again this Friday night.
Oh, it'll be a great show.
And I hope everyone will come join us at Duvet. That's 21st Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 10 p.m. We've got some great wines at a discount price, some complimentary cheese, and a bunch of fun people to hang out with, and we will have a belly dance show. So, I look forward to seeing everyone this Friday night, and I would like to thank our guests, Joe Kelly, and his right-hand man, Doug, and of course, Tana Valentine, and my good friend, Johnny Mandolin, who is manning the technology. Because I am not technologically advanced. I am primitive man. Okay. Well, it was great hearing from everyone. We will be back next Monday at 8 o'clock with a totally original pre-recorded show. And I look forward to seeing you then, but until then, we are gone.
You're listening to the Chintani Broadcasting Network, C-E-N-T-A-N-N-I broadcasting.com. Stand by, don't go anywhere. Coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, we go to L.A., our L.A. studios, and the IYF radio team. So stay with us. And we're going to head over to California, so stand by as we go to IYF Radio. The IYF Radio team taking over right now.